Shabbat Shalom. Welcome to this week's Living Torah. And I've entered into the last days, at least from the aspect of going to Israel. Just got a few days left here. Let's see, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. About 4 days in a wake-up, as my cousin would say. So I'm getting excited. Everything's kind of rolling around, you know. You just, I mean, even for Kathy and the others that are going to be going with us, they're not going to be leaving for almost a month. And it's like, okay, do I have this? Do I have this? Do I have all these things? It's amazing how much it takes to take care of this body, isn't it? Oh, for the day that we don't have to deal with all that stuff anymore. But, you know, the airlines and things, 50 pounds, right. Going to be gone how long? 50 pounds. And then they want you to come back with the same amount. And you've got to come back with some other things from Israel, you know. You've got to bless the economy over there. Speaking of, thank you so much again for those who have given to our Israel project. And it's going to be... it's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of fun. And I'm hoping I can report on some of that in this video. And God willing, this is what my plan. Let me just give you a quick plan here. Is recording, this is Wednesday, about the 4th or something like that, 4th or 5th. And this will be for this weekend. Plan on recording tomorrow for a week from now, because I'm going to be hitting the ground running, of course, in Israel, trying to keep ahead of myself. What's the chances of doing that? Slim, none, something somewhere around there. So what I'm trying to do is kind of get a little bit of ahead of myself, because there's going to be so many things going on in Israel. To just to give you in this video a little bit of a statement here, is it would be my desire and everybody's desire to go over and to just, you know, record everything and videotape everything and be able to put pictures and interviews and all kinds of stuff all over the internet. It'd be wonderful, right? It would be wonderful. It would also be wrong. There's some issues that go on in Israel from security standpoints. I think you probably, most of you would understand that very well. And so there are limited things that can be said from Israel, specifically from where we're going to be at. So if, you know, I'm going to try my best to keep up with weekly recordings. And if I can do that on some locations, various places, I will. But please don't be surprised if, you know, things are just not, you know, all the news is just not being put out. If you have questions about what's going on, of what we're doing, please email me. I'd be glad to try to answer those to the best of my ability. You know, it seems like, well, you know, just a few people, you know, some people watching a video here, what's the harm in that? Well, I receive I can look at the reports on a weekly basis. And there's a couple of countries. I've got some viewers. I don't know if they're military in these countries or who they are. So we've got to be very careful in these days. I think Yeshua was the one who said, we've got to be wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove. And so the thing that I would ask everybody to do, I've been asking you to do already, is to begin to pray already for the team that's there in the land. And we'll be there through, God willing, through November. We have no idea what will happen in these days. We have no idea what will happen in Israel, in America. You know, consider what's happening here in this country, in Europe right now. It is an absolute, it just appears to be the last days. I sent out on that subject. Sent out a few weeks ago a video that had all the weather and everything was going on in a 2-week period of August, and that was before Hurricane Isaac that came into the Gulf Coast. And it was the one that, you know, you saw the flag, that the American flag at the Olympics, how it came down. And you know, there is a tendency for people to say, well, you know, that's just in fact, one person had sent me an email, and not being judgmental toward this person, but they, you know, they worked at the weather center or something, or had some weather background, and said, well, you know, the reason that we have so much of this today is because there are more video cameras, there's the internet, there's more communication, all of these things. And I just really have to question that. And then we got in the mail, I don't subscribe to it, we got it for a gift. I thought I had it in here, but I don't. I got it in the mail, the National Geographic. And the front cover was, what is going on with the weather? You know, it's gotten to the point, and this is worldwide, it's gotten to the point that even secular people are coming to the place of saying something's happening. There was, in that article, I meant to read it and I just didn't get around to it, but Daniel read it and he said there was a quote in there that said something like, this weather is almost biblical proportion. Now, what is going to be biblical proportion? What is it going to take? It's going to take some interesting things, and I wouldn't doubt that's upon us. Of course, you know, the what's going in Israel from a political standpoint, from Iran, all of those things. You know, yeah, we could be right in the middle of it, and that's okay. That's where the Father desires for me to be, for my family, even a lot of my family. To be is right in the middle of Israel during a time of upheaval. Okay, that's his choice, and that's his desire, because he's the one that's the king, and we're the ones who are the dominion. And true trust in the king, we'll talk about that a little bit more here in the scriptures, true trust in the king means, you know, your will be done. And not just when we pray that prayer of your will be done on earth as it is in the heavens. You know, it's kind of this, your will be done out there somewhere. And we forget that we're actually praying your will be done right here. Right here in my life, I desire your will to be done. As it is in the heavens, that our lives would be lived in such a way that his desire is just played out through our life. And whatever that is, that's really his business, is it not? That's the truth of what faith is. With that, let's go to the scripture in Matthew chapter 12. One Shabbat, during that time, now of course, back up one, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. And he's now going to prove that out. One Shabbat, during that time, Yeshua was walking through some wheat fields. His Talmudim were hungry, so they began picking heads of grain and eating them. Okay. On seeing this, the Pharisees said, look, your Talmudim are violating Shabbat. Are they really? Okay. A question has to be asked. Are they truly violating Shabbat? Or are they violating what the scribes and Pharisees, the religious leaders, same context we've been talking about for how many weeks now, are they violating what the Torah says, or are they violating what the traditions and teachings of the day says? We've got to separate those two. This is going to be the context, really, of most of chapter 12. Is going to be this subject. Takes us to the obvious question. What is Shabbat? What is Shabbat all about? If you go back to Genesis chapter 2, let's just read the scriptures so that we got, you know, we can actually see what's going on here. In Genesis chapter 2, starting in verse 1, thus the heavens and the earth were finished, along with everything in them. On the seventh day, Elohim was finished with his work which he had made. So he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. Now, if we go back into a more Hebraic context of those verses, it is literally saying he ceased from his creation. That it wasn't as much, and this is a misunderstanding about Shabbat, that it was not as much about the working that he had done, but it was about the creating that he had done. What's the difference? I told this story, it's probably been quite some time, so I'm going to do it again. I was in Israel many, many years ago. And I went to a friend of mine's home for Shabbat. He was an Orthodox Jew. He lived on the third, fourth floor of this apartment complex. And so he met us at the taxi and took us to the elevator. And he said, "Why don't you ride the elevator? I mean, you know, we're goyim in his thought processes. Why don't you ride the elevator? I'll meet you at the top." Said, "Okay." So he said, "Well, just push the button and I'll meet you." It's okay. So we go to the, I push the button, you know, we go to the top. He walks four flights of stairs. Meet him there, and I said to him, humor me here. Isn't it more work to walk up the stairs than it is to push a button? And he said, "Shabbat is not about as much about working as it is about creating." And so in his mind, and you know, you can say, "Well, this is silly." And the moment you say that, you are now judging someone. Think about it. The moment that you say, "Well, that's silly," is the moment you have begun to judge another person's heart and how they are relating to the Father and how they are walking out His commandments. Be careful right there. He said, the commandment is not as much about work, but it's about creating. And he said, pushing the button on the elevator was creating electricity, was creating a spark, okay? And this goes back to the Torah, which says you're not to kindle a fire on Shabbat, okay? Why? Because in that creating, then it is going to cause you to do a lot of work around that. So we need to separate the work and the creating on the 6 days, which lends over into the seventh day. If we want to see more about this, go to Isaiah chapter 58, specifically the last parts, the last verses of Isaiah 58, and read, "If you will hold your foot back on Shabbat from doing your own interests," okay? So the Shabbat is to be made holy for Him. It is for us, for our rest, and it is for our time of, we could say, reconnecting with Him. Because He understands that, if anybody worked 6 days, He did. For in 6 days, He created, look around you, He created everything that is there. That's a pretty good work week. Probably got some overtime, right? But then He said He ceased from His creation. So that He could do what? Spend time with His creation. Same thing holds true for our lives. And that today we get running so fast during the week, we need a day to enjoy what He has created and enjoy Him. And the scribes and Pharisees, these religious leaders, had kind of forgotten that principle. And they had added to the Torah. Remember the verse from last week? "My yoke is easy. My burden is light." The scribes and Pharisees had added to the Torah. They had put a burden upon the people that the Torah did not put on them, which is kind of typical of religion, right? It's not what the Torah says. It goes beyond the Torah. And isn't it amazing how when we make rules and regulations that are beyond the Torah, that they sound so good, they sound so wonderful, they sound so holy and pious, but yet, in the end, they don't make a lot of sense because we can actually put things, and this sounds kind of a strange statement to make, we can actually set a standard that is higher than His standard. And it is a standard that is It looks good. It tastes good. It feels good. It looks good from a religious sense. But His commandment, He sets the bar right where the bar needs to be set. When we try to move it somewhere to make ourselves look better than someone else, to do whatever, it starts to become burdensome. And these religious leaders had done that in that day, in that they had set a bar far beyond what the commandment of Torah was about. Give an example. I read this many years ago, couldn't find the actual teaching, so I'm going to kind of go off of memory. But they had actually, the scribes and Pharisees, religious leaders, had actually come up with a whole scheme regarding this thing of the grain in the fields. And it went something like this, that if you were hungry, you could go into your own field. At least, you know, and there were different sects of Judaism, as there are today, all right? There are different denominations, and this is something that many people don't know. There are many, we could call them denominations within Judaism. We have Reform, we have Conservative, Orthodox, Ultra-Orthodox, Ultra-Orthodox, we have the followers of Menachem Schneerson, which is that group. I can't remember what the name of it is off the top of my head. They're kind of, to me, they're like the charismatics of Judaism. They're really cool people. But they're fascinating in a lot of different ways. We have, and in the middle of that, you have all kinds of other things, okay? And each one comes up with their own set of rules. Same as it happens in Christianity. Why? Because it's all made up of people. Isn't it interesting how that one common denominator just runs through everything, no matter where you go? So in Judaism, you have these different teachings. And one teaching says that if you were hungry, you could go into your own field, and you could get some grain, and you could, you know, just barely separate it from the husk, and you could eat it like that. Another one said that you could do the same, but then you could, but you could not, put some moisture with it and make it into a little bit of a dough. Another one said that you could take it and you could take it to your home, and you could process it, but only enough for that day. Okay, so all of these, and it went on and on from there, how many different traditions there were in the day. And so he's looking at these people and he's saying, what are we breaking? Okay, are we breaking the commandment of Torah, or are we breaking your commandments? Because we have to first differentiate between the two. And he kind of throws one at them and says, but he said to them, haven't you ever heard what David did when he and those with him were hungry? They entered the house of Yah and ate the bread of the presence, the showbread, which was prohibited both to him and to his companions. It is permitted only to the Kohanim. Let's go back to those verses. In Leviticus chapter 24, we read about, Leviticus 24:5. You are to take fine flour and use it to bake 12 loaves, 1 gallon per loaf. Arrange them in two rows, 6 in a row, on a pure table before Yudhe-Vavhe. Put frankincense on each row to be offered, made by fire to Yudhe-Vavhe in place of the bread and as a reminder of it. Regularly, every Shabbat, every Shabbat, we're tying this together, he is to arrange them before Yudhe-Vavhe. They are from the people of Israel as a covenant forever. They will belong to Aaron and his sons, and they are to eat them in a holy place, because for him they are of the offerings for Yudhe-Vavhe made by fire, especially holy. This is a permanent law. Interesting enough that he the teaching is about violating Shabbat. And so he takes them to scriptures that every one of these men standing in front of him would have been able to quote by heart. Okay, these are scribes, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the people who are working in the temple. These are the ones, and they would know these scriptures absolutely by heart. And so he takes them, and instead of arguing, okay, it does not say Yeshua said to them, "You guys don't know what you're talking about." He did not confront these religious leaders. He threw it back at them as something for them to consider. And what was that to consider? That King David, the one in which, I mean, Judaism, if Judaism has a hero, all in ways even greater than Moses himself, it is David. You know, King David. Today, it's called the City of David. We talk about Messiah, Son of David, and we're going to get to that in a few minutes. And so, he's really taking this one instance and adding so much more to it because, wait a minute, we never considered David broke the Shabbat. David violated the Torah. Now, you could have taken him to other instances too, where in today's rulings, you cannot sound a shofar on Shabbat. Well, they did at Jericho. It says that they walked around 7 days. It does not say that they took Shabbat off. In fact, they actually walked around the city on Shabbat. Some would say they worked. So, what's going on here? A number of things. Yeshua is in his throwing it back in their lap, trying to get them to examine themselves and what they have become and their relationship to the Torah, to the rules, the regulations, the instructions, the commandments of Torah. What was the purpose of those? Because they had forgotten the purpose of the commandments. They had forgotten the purpose of the rules and regulations is not just so that we can have a list of what we can and can't do. But and my favorite definition of Torah is the expressed will of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh unto mankind. It is his heart. It is his desires. It is what he likes and what he does not like. And so the purpose of these instructions of Torah is to teach us about who he is. To teach us about what our relationship with him should be and our relationship to other people. If you begin to focus just on the rules, you forget about relationship. Remember, rules without relationship equals rebellion. You've got to have the relationship within the rules. And they had forgotten that. I'll give an example. A mom, dad, you know, a small child. They've just learned how to ride a bike. They still got training wheels on it, right? And they're so excited. This is in the days you could let your children ride in the street, right? Or in the front, on the sidewalk. They're so excited, they say, "I want to go out and ride my bike in the driveway or the sidewalk or somewhere." And the mom says, the dad says, whoever says, "Okay, but don't go in the street." Now that statement is not about a rule. The statement is a rule, but it's not about a rule. The statement is about the relationship between the parent and the child. And the child has can look at this one of two ways. The child can hear that, "Don't go in the street," and they can say, "My parents I just can't stand. They're always coming up with rules and regulations, and I just can't wait until I get out of this house and all this stuff, you know," and go on and on and on. "And I'm just waiting until the day that I can go out and play in that street. I'm going to do it, you know. Wait until I turn 21. I want to play in the street." Because they forgot about what the rule is. The rule isn't about the rule. The rule is about the relationship. The parent gave the rule because of the love they have for the child. The parent spoke that rule out of love, out of protection, out of a desire to keep that child safe. So the child can either look at the rule of "don't go in the street" and say, my parents hate me, or they can say, "My parents love me," depending on how you look at the rule. Long way to say it, I believe the scribes and Pharisees, the religious leaders, had lost the concept of what that was. Now, is it really unlawful in the context? And I know Yeshua says, which is prohibited, okay? But is what he's saying, is it really prohibited, totally and completely prohibited, for David to eat of the showbread? And this has been a verse that has driven many people to so much contention. Okay, so I'm going to give a different opinion of it, and maybe throw out a little bit more contention. Who knows? It says that the showbread was for Aaron and for his sons, and they were to place it in the Mishkan, the tabernacle, every Shabbat. And it was to remind them of the covenant with the people. When they placed the bread on the table, it was to remind them every Shabbat, which I think is kind of adds more to this, that bread is and what they were doing. Their job in life was to bring a connection between the Almighty and between the people. And the moment that they changed their focus and thought that bread's about me, then things changed. That bread is about my life and with Him, and it no longer became about the people. And so they began to make all kinds of rules. These rules would eventually keep the people away from Yehovah, from the Father. Has anything changed? Rules and regulations continue to keep people away. So in the context of this, that the showbread was to be given to Aaron and his sons to remind them of the people, of the relationship, of where they were standing between the Father and the people. And they were always supposed to be connecting, trying everything they could to connect the Father and the people, not drive the two away from each other. And Yeshua comes in and He says, that's what my job is to be that greater Aaron, that greater of the priests, that high priest. And He's actually behind, if you look behind this at another level, He's kind of saying to the people, to these religious leaders, what you have forgotten, I am doing. I'm bringing the relationship back into, I'm bringing the heart back into it. So was it, in the context, was it truly prohibited not if life is the greatest order, not if relationship is, and don't take me wrong here, this is not in any way an excuse for us to find, oh, well, you know, I can look at that commandment and I can do a greater good here, you know. No, that's not it. But we do need to see that within these scriptures, you know, when Aaron and the high priest in the day of David looked at the showbread, he said, I can take this for myself. And the relationship between the Father and me, okay, it's just about me. Or I can take what is mine and I can give it to David and to his men. And therefore completing the greatest task of ministry, which is bringing the Father and bringing people together. This is something that is true to this day of ministries, of people in ministry. When it becomes about the minister, when it becomes about the pastor, about the shepherd, about the leader, about the teacher, things are on a downhill slide. The person doing the teaching, the shepherding, the leading, should in the end be the least one that is remembered. It probably goes to the book of Acts. I thought I was going to get farther today than I am. Probably goes to the book of Acts. When it says of the disciples, they knew that they had been with Yeshua. They didn't remember as much about the disciples in the end as they remembered about Yeshua. That should be for all of us. When we are able to be in some kind of ministry role, and you know, you are on a daily basis, there's people in front of you that your job, that your calling in life is to reflect the love, the care, the instructions, the relationship of the Father, the Creator, to people. And in the end, they should remember Him and not us. Or haven't you read in the Torah that on Shabbat, the Kohanim profane Shabbat and yet are blameless? You know, I've actually had people that in dealing with this concept of, you know, and I've gotten in so much trouble because I don't believe we should do business on Shabbat. You know, I made a statement a few years ago. Can't you do without your Starbucks for just one day? I mean, the way that I shouldn't get into that. Okay. The way Starbucks treats the armed forces in the United States, go do a little research on that, look it up. I don't want to have anything to do with them anyway. You know, I may have some political issues going on here, but we know there is a point of supporting the people that are out there. You might not believe whatever politically, but when you make such a statement against the military like Starbucks has, probably shouldn't have gotten under that, but I did. So, back to the scriptures, please. I've had people that have tried to use, well, you work on Shabbat. There are times that I do, yes. When I'm out and I'm traveling, we have Shabbat services. Consider that if you go to a Shabbat service, someone, you know, you drove to get there, and there's people that think we shouldn't do that, and I don't agree. Somebody came in and made the coffee that morning, and unless everybody went to Starbucks. You know, somebody opened the door, somebody turned on the air conditioner or the heater for you. There's someone up there in the front that's either giving some kind of a message or is leading the midrash for that day. Okay? It is, in some people's mind, a form of work. And so I've had people who said, well, I can work on Shabbat. It's no big deal for me to work on Shabbat because you do it. I think that's really taking it out of context. The people were to rest. They were not to create. They were to spend time with each other. They were to spend time with the Father. But there was activities in the camp, specifically the sacrifices that had to be done. Now, did the priests work every Shabbat? No. They were on a rotation. That's why I don't think as someone that travels and teaches, I don't believe that I should be out I don't believe I should be out 52 Shabbats of the year ministering to everybody. I need my own Shabbat. I need my own time to just rest and relax. I tell you that there is in this place something greater than the temple. And this was, again, right back at them. Because in Judaism, it's taught for centuries, that Messiah would come and he would be greater than the temple, the Torah. Actually, he would be the Torah. But he would be greater than the written words of the Torah in the sense that he would be able to fill up the Torah. He would be able to explain the Torah. He would be able to bring the Torah to another level than what man had been able to bring it to. He would be able to see, to show people the relationship between the Father and those rules and regulations, those instructions that they had seen through those years. Messiah would be able to bring a fullness. Isn't that what he said in Matthew chapter 5? He would be able to bring a fullness to the Torah, and this is what he's doing right here. He's saying, you know, they come to the place in their life that they were worshiping the building. Same holds true today in Judaism and everybody else, all right? You go to Israel today, and it's about for a group of people, it's about the third temple. And they've got this thing of Herod's temple and how it's going to be Herod's temple. I do not believe for one moment, not for one moment, that the third temple is going to look like Herod's temple. I just don't feel there is a snowball's chance regarding that one. Because Herod's temple was something that was really, it was added to. Is there a reason why in the book of Acts he says, I'll restore the fallen tabernacle of David? We'll just have to see how that one plays out in the end. And then, of course, we have the temple in Ezekiel is spoken of also. The point is this. Their religion had become so much about the building, the sign on the front door, that even the Messiah himself standing in front of them would not be able to bring them back from where they had gone, from their religion that they had created. Now, we can't point much of a finger at Judaism, can we? Because I can drive around here within just a few miles in Oklahoma of my house. And I can go around and I can tell you from the look of the building, from the sign out front, what they believe. And if I were to go into most everyone, I'm not invited, but if I were to go into most every one of those buildings and on a Sunday morning stand before the people and read the actual words of Messiah, how many of those buildings would you be thrown out of? You know. Those of you looking at me, this, you know. You've been there. Okay? You've stood up in your religious system and said, wait a minute, in the words of Deuteronomy chapter 30, hey, the other day I was thinking, and all of a sudden, what happened? Got you in trouble, didn't it? Well, same thing holds true with Yeshua. We'll get into that in just a little bit, probably tomorrow or probably next week. If you knew what "I want compassion rather than animal sacrifice" meant, you would not condemn the innocent. Okay, here's one of those Greek versus Hebrew things. In Greek, we say, "I want compassion rather than animal sacrifice." So, he's telling us that all of those sacrifices, that was all a mistake. And that the Father has now changed his mind, and we shouldn't think about those things anymore. And, boy, I sure wish I hadn't have instituted that. Why couldn't I have done this before? You know, with Adam and Eve, I could have done something besides an animal. You know, I could have just gone out and made some cotton and put on, you know. No, that's not what he was saying here. He's in a Hebrew context, I feel, he's tying the two together as one and saying, you got to keep the cart in front of the horse. The cart is the sacrifices. The compassion is the horse out front. The compassion, the mercy, the relationship, all of that has to lead the sacrifices, not the other way around. Because if the cart gets in front of the horse, you're going to forget what this is all about. Can't see another way to say it. For the Son of Man is the Adonai, the master of the Shabbat. I'm He, standing in front of you. This is out of their own writings of the day. That Messiah would be greater than. You know, the servant is not greater than the master. And the creation is not greater than the creator. He's saying, I am the master, the creator of the Shabbat. If you want to know what something is all about, you go to the creator. If you want to know the purpose of something, Tigger, good excuse for some to have a sip here. The air conditioner's been blowing right on that. Ugh. If you want to know the purpose for a cup, you don't ask the cup. You don't look and go, hey, Tigger, what's your purpose? Why? Because he doesn't know. It's an inanimate object. If I want to know the purpose of something, and I don't know the purpose of a cup, who would I ask? The creator of the cup. Because the creator of the cup had a specific purpose in mind. They made this cup not as a container for gasoline. They didn't make this cup for, you know, a wine glass. They made this cup because of the way that it's formed, it's shaped, the handle, the placement, the size. All of those things were made specifically for some kind of a hot beverage. It wasn't made as a hammer. It was made as a cup to hold exactly, hotter than this. Coffee or something like that in it. So he is looking at them, saying basically this, I'm the creator of the Shabbat. You're the creation within the Shabbat. Now, do you want to know what Shabbat is really all about? If so, you should be asking the one who is standing in front of you who is able to explain it. Not yourselves. Going on from that place, real quickly, he went into their synagogue. A man there had a shriveled hand, looking for a reason to accuse him of something. Okay, wait a minute. Not looking for further meaning. Not looking for further relationship. but looking to accuse him of something. Why? Because they're seeing this guy is gaining control. And if he gains control, I'm going to lose control. They ask him, is healing permitted on Shabbat? And he didn't say, well, of course, you stupid idiot. No. He didn't come up with some kind of a whatever. Instead, he threw it back at them. Once again, pretty smart guy, right? If you have a sheep that falls into a pit on Shabbat, which of you won't take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable is a man than a sheep? Now, the obvious, even, and he says sheep, because these guys are all about sheep, right? They're all about the sacrifices in the temple. The sheep is kind of like the holy thing to them. And so if you have something that is that holy as a sheep that is going to be next week offered in the temple sacrifice, the animal sacrifice, and it falls in a pit and it's Shabbat, isn't the holiness of saving the life of the sheep, doesn't that take a higher priority than the holiness of Shabbat? Any one of these leaders would have said, well, of course. And he says, how much more valuable is that man than your sheep? And to them, that was quite a question. Because they had placed their job of sacrifices above the people. They had placed, this is good, all right, listen to this. They had placed their job, their ministry. They had placed sheep above people. The Creator would never do that. He says that there's a day that they will worship the creation more than the Creator. They were doing this in that day also. Therefore, what is permitted on Shabbat? Is it to do good? I mean, these people are trapped. Then to the man he said, hold out your hand, and he held it out and became restored, so as sound as the other one. Shouldn't we be rejoicing over this? I mean, here's a guy, we don't know how long he's had this withered hand. We don't really know what the withered hand is all about. I have no idea. But the man is not whole. The man is in pain. The man cannot function as fully as a man. The man, because he has a withered hand, and one of the words for praise is to throw forth. It's that idea we get of raising holy hands. Is to throw forth our praises unto Him. And because He had a withered hand, He was not able to fully worship the Father the way that He was created to do. Shouldn't we be rejoicing over that? I would say so. But what does religion do? But the Pharisees went out and began plotting how they might do away with Yeshua. Aware of this, he left that area. You know, it doesn't make sense. Yeah, it does. It makes perfect sense when you understand that history continues to repeat itself. It's right there. Putting our own doctrines, and don't tell me that this doesn't happen in the Hebrew roots, Messianic, whatever movement. Putting our own doctrines, our own desires, our own junk in front of what His Word says. You know what it ends up doing? It ends up putting people in bondage, not freeing them to praise and worship the King the way that they are supposed to, the way that they were created to. Religion takes us away from Him. Relationship brings us to Him. I think that's the message we've been doing for probably much of the last year. Same message that was 2,000 years ago. Same message that is today. Same message that will be tomorrow. As I said to this person recently, never allow religion to keep you away from a relationship with the Father. Pretty good words. And with that, we'll see you again, God willing. See you, Bezrat Hashem. See you again next week. And actually, I'll be sitting here looking at this camera, I guess, tomorrow again. But please be praying for us as people are there, people are preparing to leave, people coming in and out of the land for the next couple of months, really. So if you can't be there with us in body right now, you can be there with us in prayers, and we're sure to appreciate that. So until then, until next week, we'll, I guess, see you then.
Yivarechecha Adonai v'yishmarecha Ya'er Adonai panav elecha v'yichunecha Yisa Adonai Sem lecha shalom.